You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Caroline Hyde at Bloomberg's World Headquarters in New York.
I'm Ed Ludlow in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg Technology, and activists to artificial intelligence to stocks just falling off a cliff, Caroline. What a week in the world of technology.
The earnings are becoming thick and fast. We still start to digest them. And of course, we look ahead to a pretty important big game come Sunday. Let's talk about all of it, because coming up, Ed, a record plunge for Lyft. The ride-sharing giant sees shares plummet as it loses market share to competitor Uber. We'll have the latest for you.
And using automated intelligence to combat automated intelligence. We'll speak to the CEO of Seeker on how his company's technology is fighting the growing problem of misinformation in generative AI.
Plus, a countdown to the Super Bowl. From tickets to betting to advertising, we'll run through what to expect and even what to order when you're watching the big game this Sunday. Is it cauliflower? All that and so much more coming up. Let's have a quick check on what's happening in the markets. We are on a down day again. It is all about the macro. It's all about the Federal Reserve. It's all about, therefore, tech stocks falling as borrowing costs rise. Yields up 7 basis points on the 10-year. NASDAQ off once again. We're seeing the VIX index just stabilizing around 20, but volatility is elevated as we think that these swirling movements in stocks are likely to prevail. Let's kick it on and show you what it meant for the week. The NASDAQ 100 was under pressure. In fact, it was the worst week for this particular benchmark since December. So this year, Ed.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing a similar story in individual names. It's about what happened Friday and then what happened in the week. You look at like a name like Tesla, down 5% Friday, but actually finishing higher on the week by almost 4%. Alphabet continuing its slide, more modest decline of 0.5 percentage point, but actually its worst week since November, believe it or not, Caroline, down for a third consecutive straight day. First time that's happened since early December. So the market's really seizing onto those mishaps around its Bard AI offering. Spotify, interesting, up 3.6%. 6%. Dig into this in the show later on about Value Act, taking a stake, supporting the strategy around cost cuts. And then, of course, Lyft. I've got a different chart for you on Lyft that tells the story. A picture paints a thousand words. Mr. Director, give me my terminal chart, because this is the biggest drop on record for Lyft. You can see the size and scope of the reaction from investors. I want to get more straight away on Lyft with Bloomberg's Jackie Davalos, who covers all things gig economy and ride sharing in Washington. Jackie, what was the reaction to this plunge?
Wall Street is very unhappy, Ed. You saw it in just the massive wave of downgrades a mere day after the results yesterday. You had about 8 major banks looking at the stock and saying, we don't know if it's worth as much as it was. Among those, you had JP Morgan basically saying, you know, we don't know if the rideshare rebound is really lifting all boats and Lyft is missing out. You had Morgan Stanley looking at the slim profit margins that come from cutting those prices. And among them, one of the most pessimistic takes was from Bank of America, which lowered its price target to about $10. That's massive considering the company IPO'd at around the 70s. And they said, you know, we don't know if the growth outlook is here anymore, considering you're having to lower prices to get those consumers back. But there is one bright spot, which is if there's anything to bring back some investor faith, it's what is it going to take to get some of those costs down even further and put more earnings back into investors' pockets. So the company mentioned they were willing to look at additional cost cuts. So investors are waiting to see what those are going to be.
Interesting. I'm going to play devil's advocate, and let's look at the silver linings a bit more. Here's a company that's saying we had the highest quarterly revenue in their history. There's a company who's trying to say they had 20.4 million riders overall, active riders. That's a new record. People are coming back and doing ride sharing more often. What about some of the narrative around the fact that we're getting more driver supply? Ultimately, are they able in any way to fight back to such a remarkable market move?
You'd think that that's a good thing, that drivers are coming back to the platform. The problem last year was that there weren't enough, and that meant higher prices. But it's an interesting dynamic because those higher prices helped lift revenue and profit for both companies. But the disadvantage that Lyft has here is that it's solely relying on a rideshare business. It doesn't have delivery the way Uber does. And so when you think about some of the supply and rider demand dynamics coming into play again and seeing less right. of those higher fares get into the revenue line, they have to find another way to grow.
Jackie, I always appreciate Caroline's silver lining. I appreciate her every day playing devil's advocate. Let me bring us crashing back to reality and bring up this chart. And let's talk about market share, because you and I look really closely at the reality of this market share situation. And is it fair that Lyft is becoming an even more distant second place to Uber?
It's looking that way. And, you know, when we think about where the two companies were at the beginning of the pandemic, Uber really hadn't grown out its food delivery business the way it has in just the last year. So I think the future for Lyft is looking a little bit bleak. It's looking at its membership product to kind of tap some more customers, get that retention up. But so far, that market share just keeps ticking down. And so we'll have to see what other tricks it has in its pockets, because investors are waiting to see some more of those active riders return.
Bloomberg's Jackie Davalos, very busy week for you. Very big contrast between Uber and Lyft in their earnings prints. Now let's turn from ride sharing to EVs. Tesla has hired a new legal chief after years of turnover. In a post on LinkedIn, Brandon Earhart revealed he's assumed the role of Tesla's general counsel and corporate secretary after departing from Dish. The move comes after Musk tweeted last year that the company was, quote, building a hardcore litigation department where we directly initiate and execute lawsuits. And Caroline, speaking of Tesla, in our weekly Twitter spaces earlier, we had our special guest speaker who had some choice words for Elon Musk. Take a listen.
I think it's crucially important to be able to take criticism. And this is something that over the years I've realized with Elon, you know, he's very thin-skinned.
And so thin-skinned is Elon Musk that Ross Gerber told you and I that he is going to make an activist play for Tesla's board.
I think activism is the thing to be watching, isn't it? We're about to talk about it when it comes to Spotify as well. But what's so interesting with Ross Gerber is he, in many ways, has been saying, look, I've been out there talking about Tesla because the company itself won't talk about itself because they don't right. have a marketing play. They don't really go out there to the mainstream media, as they call it. He wants to change that. He wants to have change from within. He wants to try and get a board seat. Fascinating what the reaction will be, because ultimately he's a Tesla bull. It's not as though he's wanting complete yeah. rip up the script here.
Yeah, I had to crunch the data. He has 440,000 shares or so at Gerber Kawasaki. That's 0.01% of the float, right? So tiny player. But he told us he has the support mm. and pledge of the single biggest individual shareholder. And he dropped some names on the institutional side as well. So if he gets momentum, let's see. But there was a lot of criticism and skepticism on Twitter, at least, when that news came out.
So great to have these guests joining us on Twitter Spaces. Come join us next Friday. Meanwhile, let's turn to a story that we've been following all week. And, well, Kraken has settled that SEC and will pay $30 million amid allegations it broke the agency's rules with its crypto asset staking products. Now, earlier, Bloomberg caught up with the SEC itself, the chair, Gary Gensler. Just take a listen.
The significance is there's a business model in crypto whereby these, I'll call them storefronts, they're intermediaries. They ask the public and they solicit the public for their funds, their crypto, and they say, we'll give you a return. And they might call it lending. In this case, it was called staking as a service, and we'll give you 4%, 8%, or even 21% returns. And therein lies the issue. They were doing this without the proper disclosure, and the investing public gets to decide what risks they want to take. And these key questions, was Kraken or others that do this, were they taking those tokens and doing what they're saying on their website? Or are they lending them, trading against them, running other business models? And so the disclosure is critical for the investing public.
So my understanding is now Kraken can no longer do this domestically in the United States for U.S. citizens, unless, I guess, they register as a security. Does that break the business model? Do you understand it? Does that mean they can't be in that business? Or can they just come back and say, okay, now we'll register, we'll make the disclosures you want?
I'll make it more generic. These storefronts, these crypto exchanges, crypto lending platforms, crypto staking as a service, they need to come into compliance, and they are generally non-compliant right now. And the investing public is not only at risk by the speculative nature of crypto, but they're at risk of ending up in line in a bankruptcy court because a lot of these platforms are doing things they're not disclosing. So to answer your question, yes, firms can come into compliance, time-tested rules, register their offerings, and properly disclose the risk and what they're doing with your funds behind the scenes. And that would be a compliant field. In this case, Kraken chose, they didn't want to offer this in the U.S., and we settled.
SEC Chair Gary Gansler earlier with our own David Weston. Meanwhile, well, let's talk about President Joe Biden. He's ordering the Pentagon to shoot down, we understood, an object spotted at 40,000 feet over Alaska, less than a week, of course, after fighter jets targeted an alleged Chinese surveillance balloon that had crossed the U.S. and provoked a national uproar. The U.S. has also sanctioned six firms linked to Chinese aerospace programs, including airships and balloons.
Like any technology, it definitely has its limitation. So we actually, like anything that you implement, we know its limitations.
Navan CEO Ariel Cohen yesterday there saying, look, they know that the AI that that company has implemented in their business, it isn't perfect, and that they still need to rely on real people from time to time. And look, let's talk a little bit more about imperfection. Let's talk about the rush into artificial intelligence and indeed the risks there, whether it's ethical, whether it's ultimately security-wise too. We're pleased to welcome to the show Pat Kondo, founder, CEO of search engine and information evaluation provider, Seeker. And first and foremost, Pat, your company basically uses artificial intelligence itself to analyze articles out there and provide, well, an analysis of how misleading, how factually correct they are. Just talk to us about ChatGPT or other generative AI models and chatbots. How much could they feed disinformation?
Yes, so they're going to create an explosion of content, which is the objective here, is by having it widely distributed and present in every application that we use. The whole idea is to create as much content as possible. And then, of course, they've got the compute resources behind that in their cloud to service that content. So it becomes almost a perfect engine. The more content, the more usage, the more income is generated. So it's no surprise that they've introduced it at this time as their earnings begin to, you know, flag a bit. Huh. This is yet a new way to drive the earnings process.
To take the other side, like, companies are also deeply excited by the productivity these sorts of innovations can bring, how artificial intelligence, generative AI can really help fuel further growth, not just for their own companies, but for us all, for economies, for people, for companies, for productivity. But talk to us therefore about what they could put in place to make sure that these movements are safe. We know that OpenAI uses machines and humans to monitor content. What could they do, Pat?
Well, you know, without transparency, there's no trust. And what we've seen today is there's a lack of transparency on the web, and that's been growing over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And so now we have something like a generative AI, which is going to produce, you know, even orders of magnitude content. So what needs to be put in place is what's been put in place over time, which are rating systems. And a rating system can right. help gauge the quality and credibility of the content that's being created. And with that, you get the trust, and with the trust, you'll get use, and you'll be able to yet again generate kind of another evolution in the use of this kind of capability.
Right. Pat, this week seemed to sum up this conversation, right? You had the risk with Alphabet on the one hand, and the sort of euphoria with Microsoft on the other. And what it took was a demo video from Google, which demonstrated its Bard AI giving an inaccurate reading, and the stocks had its worst week since November. This moment in time now, in your opinion, which was the bigger moment for artificial intelligence? What came out of Microsoft or what we see on the screen right now, which is the market reaction to Google's inaccuracy, its problem?
Well, I think everybody that is a, you know, uses digital products online know that trust is an issue. And I think both companies have proven that by pushing something to market without having trust behind it or transparency is going to create more confusion and more concern than it is benefit. Now, over time, that can be ameliorated, but now they've got to actually defend something that, had they set it out with the transparency and a measurement scheme on quality, they may not have been in this particular situation.
Does OpenAI's technology make Microsoft's Bing more competitive in the search market?
I would say it will at least maintain their position. Google, on the other hand, both have taken a different approach. Microsoft has approached it by introducing a conversational platform, but Google is actually approaching it by producing next generation of a search platform. And the difference here is the size of the data that's used, the source of the data, and the depth. And until we know both, it's very hard to tell.
Let's talk about where else some sort of rails of the road could come in. And many would argue that's government's role. Department of Commerce has released version 1.0 of AI risk management framework. We also know that the White House has released, end of last year, I believe it was, a framework for an AI Bill of Rights, which some companies are pushing back on. Is there enough coming from an administration perspective here to have oversight to ensure that AI is built appropriately?
I think in most democracies, people are not interested in over-regulation by the government. I think the source is going to be private companies, and I think giving those private companies visibility to their solutions is really what has to happen. I don't think it should come from government.
Seeker founder and CEO, Pat Kondo. Thank you. Let's talk about artificial intelligence, some of the euphoria around it, and people who want to get in on the action. Sound Ventures, it's the LA-based firm from actor Ashton Kutcher. He's discussing raising a fund dedicated to AI investments. It's all according to a source. It may target around $200 million for the vehicle, though the terms haven't yet been finalized and could still change. Other firms raising or planning to raise capital dedicated to artificial intelligence include Radical Ventures, Air Street Capital, and Conviction Partners. It's a theme, Ed.
Coming up, for some, it's a dream come true. Being able to immerse yourself, Caroline, in the world of Harry Potter with a new game out today. But there's some controversy around it too. We'll unpack it all next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop. Customer satisfaction scores would rise and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Harry Potter fans, there are a lot of them, and many have long wished to inhabit or at least visit Hogwarts Castle. Now, it's possible with a new video game, Hogwarts Legacy, which offers the most convincing recreation yet, but the culture wars surrounding the game are raging too. Let's bring in Bloomberg's Jason Schreier for more on this. And just talk to us first and foremost about the culture wars side of it. J.K. Rowling has by many been widely perceived to make transphobic comments dating back to 2018. It's left many quandering whether they buy the game or not, right?
Yeah, this game has been controversial from the start. It was actually announced just a few months after J.K. Rowling became open about her views on transgender people. And as a result, people started from the get-go talking about boycotts, talking about not playing the game, how if you play the game or buy the game, you are supporting somebody whose views are seen by a lot of people to be transphobic, somebody who has spoken out against legislation in Scotland that would make it easier for people to change their genders on their birth certificates and a whole bunch of other stuff. So yes, unlike the books of old, the Harry Potter books, which I think came out and were just blockbuster launches and fans were lining up at midnight, this one comes with a little bit more controversy.
Well, look, this video game is seizing a big moment. You know, everyone's talking about it. You point out in the business of video games, shout out Game On newsletter from you, which I love reading, that whatever you think about it, it's well reviewed. It's got people looking at the game itself.
Yeah, what's interesting is in the past, the Harry Potter games were usually these movie tie-in games that were rushed out, kind of slapdash games that were put together to just make the release of the film, and they follow the same story as each of the films. This is completely original. It's set 100 years before the books even took place. It's this high-end game, unlike any other Harry Potter game we've seen, and that is one of the reasons it's getting such high reviews. It's a game we haven't seen before. We haven't seen a recreation of Hogwarts Castle this detailed before.
And very inclusive details within some of that game as well, which in your great report you sort of say almost as if they're really trying to combat to a significant amount any culture war that could envelop them. To your point, Jason, like when they are interweaving this sort of inclusion and they are making it hospitable for many a young person to come and play, when it's a game that's good, is it really good? Is it going to attract people no matter what? Because it feels like the sales have been pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, sales are great first and foremost because of Harry Potter. There are some games that are critically acclaimed but don't sell the kind of the critical mass that this is reaching. That said, yes, to your point about inclusion, it's really interesting, especially in the wake of J.K. Rowling's views, and I won't get into everything because it would take us many hours to unpack all of the criticism that's been held about the Harry Potter series in general and minorities and race and anti-Semitic tropes and all that other stuff. But this game feels like it's trying to be extremely welcoming. The character creator, for example, when you start a new character in the game, that's the who you play as in the game, you can create one that has a voice and a body type that is completely independent from their dormitory choice of male and female. So you can create a pretty trans-friendly character, which is really a unique thing and something that is very refreshing and I think would be welcome by a lot of people if not for all the baggage that the series author has come with.
Bloomberg's Jason Schreier, thank you so much. And if you don't, do subscribe to the Game On newsletter that Jason and his team put out.
Welcome back to Bloomberg Technology. I'm Caroline Hyde in New York. And
I'm Ed Ludlow. Almost it's me in San Francisco.
It's a Friday vibe. And it's a Friday vibe because it's about to be a big Sunday vibe too. The Super Bowl, and it's going viral. FanDuel expecting record bets on its platform on Sunday. CEO Amy Ho spoke to Bloomberg Markets earlier. Take a listen.
We're projecting 17 million bets on the platform, which is more than double what we would have seen last year. There's three new states online this year. But it's also, it's our biggest acquisition moment of the year. We'll probably bring 500,000 new users onto the platform leading up to and on the day of. And it's a great opportunity. They get to, you know, bet on hundreds of different player props. So it's going to be an exciting day for fans.
Amy, good morning. It's Guy. Is it going to be profitable for you? Is it going to be a good day for you? How does this stack up in terms of the bottom line?
Oh, listen, it's going to be a big day. And, you know, it all depends on the outcome of the game. I think the most important thing is consumers bet based on the narrative that they want to see. And I think, you know, what you're seeing is right now, the money is definitely flowing to the Philadelphia Eagles. So apologies if you're a Chiefs fan. But what's most exciting is the player props, right? 90% of our bets will contain at least one player prop. We think 35-40% of our bets will be a same game parlay. And so that's exciting, right? You can bet on the fact that the Kelce brothers will both score a touchdown, you know, the correct score. There's 30,000 bets on the Eagles beating the Chiefs 37-34. So there's just so many different bets you can choose from. And if hopefully it's a consumer friendly day, but we'll
Amy,
see.
Amy, how big are those parlay bets going to be in terms of the volume and also the profitability then for you guys?
They're huge. I mean, listen, same game parlay has been a big advantage for FanDuel. We're owned by our parent company, Flutter Entertainment. And this is a product that we brought over from Australia and other parts of the world. We were the first to market. And so for us, it's a much higher percentage of our overall mix. It's driven a big structural margin advantage for us. But it's also why I think sports betting has really taken off. It's, you know, when you're invested in a player or a certain parlay, it makes the game that much more exciting, even if the game's a blowout.
Amy, you mentioned a moment ago that this is going to be a big day for you in terms of customer acquisition. What is the cost of acquisition for those customers?
I mean, listen, one of the things that's really driven FanDuel's success is we've been way more efficient in how we drive customers to the platform, right? We have a massive scale advantage in the U.S. where we have about a 45% share of the market, but we've been able to be about 25% more efficient in bringing customers onto the platform. You know, a big part of that has been the head start we had with our fantasy sports business, but we've also had a level of discipline. So, you know, your acquisition costs are obviously going to vary depending on the event, and this is an important event. This is an important event for us.
Are you still sticking to profitability by the end of this year? Could it be sooner, later? What are the factors?
Yeah, we feel very confident about our path to profitability for 2023. We were the first operator, at least U.S. operator, to be profitable in Q2 of this year. Fundamentals of our business are looking very strong, and so we remain very confident about full year profitability this year.
That was FanDuel CEO Amy Howe there. Let's continue the conversation. Bloomberg Senior Executive Editor, Head of Global Tech Coverage, Brad Stone. And Brad, you were writing this week in one of our Bloomberg Tech Daily newsletters that this could be the biggest weekend for the U.S. betting industry in history. But the story is a tech one. It's about online and it's about the apps.
That's right, Ed. I mean, the single most bet upon sporting event in U.S. history, and it's setting all kinds of records, you know, for a number of reasons. Since 2018, sports betting has been legal in the U.S. That was a Supreme Court decision. You've had these, as Amy Howe said, these fantasy apps like FanDuel and DraftKings pivoting into the sports betting business, and then 33 states legalizing it. Now, here in California, Ed, we can't get in on the action. Voters turned down a ballot proposition last November, but recently in states like Ohio and Massachusetts and Indiana, sports betting is legal and people are embracing it.
Then why, when Amy Howe's there being pushed about profitability, she's talking it up, but the share price of hers, of competitors, have been so under pressure, why is everyone sort of taking a step back to think, oh, maybe this hasn't been quite the whirlwind success we expected?
Well, I mean, Caroline, you turn on a football game and you see J.B. Smoove, the comedian, advertising for Caesars and the Manning brothers. Manning brothers also advertising for Caesars. Jamie Foxx, BetMGM, FanDuel and DraftKings are everywhere. It's the competition. And this has been a gold rush. As Amy House said, there is a scramble, particularly around the Super Bowl, to acquire new users. It basically mirrors what's happened in the tech industry at large. You know, discarding notions of profitability, trying to acquire new customers, marketing, spending, hiring. And now, you know, with the recession and all this competition, investors are looking for profitability. Right. And that's why we've seen some of the stock prices come down.
I am a fair weather 49ers fan. And so I'm still going to my Super Bowl party this Sunday with very little interest or anything to cheer about. I don't have a horse in this race. But my friends are talking about parlays, and I have no idea what they're talking about. What is it that they're talking about?
Well, first of all, Ed, I have to say my mother's from Philadelphia. We have a lot of family in Philadelphia.
Go.
So I'm going with the Eagles and Jalen Hurts on Sunday. But you're right. This thing called parlays, Amy Howe mentioned it, is such a big phenomenon right now. I think FanDuel is saying 45% of all the bets will be on parlays. And think about that as a lottery ticket. You're betting on a number of things to happen. And if they all do, then you win. So let's say you can bet the Chiefs will win, Patrick Mahomes will pass for over 300 yards. Their tight end Travis Kelce will catch a touchdown. That would be called like a three-leg parlay, I believe. And if you hit that, you win. But as these bets get longer and more sophisticated, the odds get better and the potential payout increases.
Brad, may the best team win for your household. Thank you. Bloomberg, head of global tech coverage, Brad Stone. Great to check in with him. And well, let's continue the conversation because, look, maybe Ed's not going to get too psyched about which team wins, but maybe he's going to get into the ads, whereas I'm getting to Rihanna. Well, we can talk about all of it, the advertising angle with Kevin Krim, his CEO and president of EDO, or Entertainment Data Oracle. It's a platform measuring predictive behaviors driven by convergent TV advertising. So, Kevin, first and foremost, we're just going to bring you a poll from our own audience. We went to them to Twitter to ask, look, what are you caring about in the Super Bowl? Are you caring about the actual game, the actual play? Or are you caring about the ads? Actually, about 30% said, yeah, actually, they really care about the adverts, which is pretty a lot when actually less than 50% are saying it's about the game. The other 22% are with me on Rihanna. But talk to us about why we care about the ads so much. Why do 30% of people on Twitter think that it's all about the ads on Sunday?
This is a special event in American culture. It brings together a much broader demographic than you see in a normal NFL game. And frankly, it's the largest audience that TV attracts all year by a large margin. So what you get is a diverse audience. And, you know, the advertising industry realizes that they can reach more people in one short moment than any other time of the year. So they bring out their best creative ideas. And so that comes together and shows that the ads can be as entertaining as the action in the game.
Now, of course, my mind goes back to last year. And quite often people would say perhaps this is the canary in the coal mine, the people who spend the biggest actually end up being the companies you shouldn't be betting on in real life. Ultimately, it was crypto. Crypto owned the space this time last year, and we know what's happened since that for the industry group. Talk to us about who's going to be putting money out there on some very expensive advertising spots.
Well, crypto's pain was sports betting's gain this year in the NFL. So, you know, I really think that the sports betting sites that you were featuring just now, they will be major spenders in this game. You're going to see a lot from the beer and alcohol category. This is the first year in a long time where Anheuser-Busch didn't have the exclusive on the category. So you're seeing more competition there. And I think competition is one of the really interesting themes this year. You're going to see a big presence from the delivery competitors, Uber Eats with its Uber One subscription and DoorDash. And, you know, both of those are indicative of some of the themes of what we see are the best performing ads in a Super Bowl.
Like Caroline, Kevin, my mind goes back to last year in a different, I guess phenomenon is the right word, but there's one company I cover closely which does not advertise in traditional methods, which is Tesla. And yet, following 2022 Super Bowl, Tesla shared data that they saw a massive surge in interest and orders because their competitors had put so much energy and money into advertising at the Super Bowl. Is there anything you can speak to about that, the indirect effects of all of this effort to get primetime spots on Super Bowl Sunday?
Absolutely. Polestar, the electric vehicle company, had the single best performing ad in our rankings last year. It generated the most engagement from consumers after that ad aired. And it was a powerful ad. It really took a swing at Tesla. And what we see in the data is that consumers, first of all, love electric vehicles. They respond at a much higher rate on a per-person basis than they do for gas-powered regular vehicles across all of automotive advertising on TV year-round. And so the automakers responded with a flurry of EV ads last year. And what you do see in our data is that consumers do get confused occasionally, and they'll search for a competitor's brand when it's a different brand that's actually advertising. And that certainly will have that sort of a rising tide lifts all boats kind of effect for a whole category when you see that kind of big push behind EVs.
Look, I know the nation's excited for the Super Bowl, but we spent most of this year so far and pretty much all of 2022 talking about the slowdown in the ad market, talking about advertisers pulling back and then the new players that are encroaching, right, in the world of streaming. How does that factor into this Sunday?
Well, just on that subject of automakers, you're going to see a lot fewer automobile ads than you would have in many of the past years. It's going to be a marked drop in automotive advertising. And a category like streaming, which is incredibly competitive right now, you're going to see a lot more streaming ads from basically every player in the marketplace. They will all be present in this game.
Kevin Krim, CEO and president of EDO, just great insight. You know, you have to wait for the ads, right? You have to wait and see what happens Sunday. But at least now
you'll be able to see our rankings of the best performing ads early Monday morning on adweek.com. So take a look at that.
All right, we'll look out. Thank you very much. Now, Bloomberg's learned that Fox has turned down offers of more than $2 billion for its Tubi streaming service. That's more than four times what it paid for the business. But Fox CEO Lachlan Murdoch wants to keep Tubi as it continues to grow. Tubi is a free ad-supported service, and it's free online TV that's bringing in the viewers these days. This is consumers, as we all know, migrate from traditional cable TV to a combination of subscription and free-to-watch services. Revenue at Tubi and other ad-based video on-demand services is expected to double to $30 billion in the U.S. by 2026. That according to Digital TV Research. Now, coming up, no rest for the activist investor. Spotify is the latest target as one firm seeks to support cost-cutting measures at music streaming giant. We'll bring you the details next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
So Spotify is the latest company now to be targeted by an activist investor. It's Value Act Capital Management. It has built a position, we understand, in the music streaming giant, and it's supporting the company's plans to tighten down on spending and become more efficient. And for more on the news, who helped break it all, Bloomberg's Liana Baker. And, I mean, Value Act's been busy. They've already just taken a board seat at Salesforce. In fact, activist investors in general have been pretty busy at the moment, Liana.
It's true. It's been a busy week for activist investors, although at Disney, Nelson Peltz is not doing a proxy fight anymore, so we don't have to worry about that. But Value Act, based in San Francisco, they're very involved in tech right now. Mason Morfitt gave a speech this morning at Columbia in New York, and that's where he revealed that they were now in Spotify. He sat on boards like Microsoft. You mentioned he's on Salesforce and Ford. So right now, we don't know how big their stake is or what exactly they're doing behind the scenes. But Spotify has been cutting costs, and they like that.
Right. Well, that, I guess that's my question. I know that they're looking at technology of late, but why Spotify? What is it about Spotify that makes them a target? They're kind of already doing the things that many activist investors come in and push for.
Well, they haven't had an activist before, so that's one thing that could be compelling that would attract an investor to try to shake things up. But Spotify, like many tech companies, expanded its headcount during the pandemic by a lot. And they really saw their costs balloon as they got further into podcasting and content. So it seems like there could be a lot of fat to trim here. And that is kind of what is attracting Value Act. They've started to make some changes, but, you know, there could always be more. And we'll see what happens with Spotify. It is founder controlled. The CEO is also the founder, and that's always a bit complicated for activists. But Value Act has gone into companies before, like the New York Times, that also were controlled by families.
Liana, what was interesting about your scoop was the information was sort of coming from a speech that Value Act, the CEO, Mason Morfitt, had made at the Columbia University. And just tell me through how this usually unfolds. Because when you read the story and you hear what he's saying about Spotify, it all seems really rather complimentary. What are usually the tacks that they take? Do they tend to go for the jugular? Do they tend to say, look, we're really aligning ourselves with the business here and we want to be long-term investors, blah, blah, blah?
So I would say Value Act, their strategy is usually to be friendlier to companies. It's sort of jargon, but they're known as constructivists instead of activists, which would be the normal term. And they like to get involved behind the scenes. So when Mason Morfitt sat on Microsoft's board, maybe we didn't hear from him, but Microsoft made a lot of changes that, you know, helped get it where it is today. So they're very behind the scenes, but they did make this publicly known in a speech today. So that was a bit surprising. You don't always see a new investor come out during a speech. Usually it's in a filing, but there's so little detail right now on how big the stake is. So we'll be looking for more detail.
Bloomberg's Liana Baker, terrific reporting once again. Happy Friday. Now, turning to Expedia, the online travel name receiving a wave of analyst upgrades as the company sees a strong start to the year. Earlier, we heard from CEO Peter Kern, who explained how they've been able to buck the trend of tech layoffs.
We actually did a lot during COVID and pre-COVID to right-size our business, so we were way ahead of the curve. And while a lot of tech companies were adding quite aggressively during COVID, we were actually stable to down. So we're in a great place now. We've added a lot of technology capabilities and a lot of more people in engineering and product than we used to have. But in general, we are in a really good spot, and we're continuing to invest in the product and our capabilities for the consumer. So we don't expect to see any major downsizing.
and on technology. I heard you. Everyone's talking about AI. Talking about personalization on your conference call. Peter, if the story ahead is one where there could continue to be growth, where are you expecting to see that growth in 2023? I know there's been a lot of focus on what happens in Asia, particularly with China's reopening.
Yeah, so it's a couple parts for us. There's definitely some geographical opportunities in Asia, but to a large extent, we've been rebuilding our whole technical platform for the last couple of years and rolling out our new marketing strategy in the U.S., which is really focused on long-term customer retention, high-value consumers, and really working on retention, great products, sticky products, great loyalty programs, and that's really been working in the U.S., and we are now starting to roll that out to more places and more brands as those capabilities expand and we get our technological transformation finished. So that's really going to drive our growth. But geographically, we expect the West to be strong, Asia to come back. And so far, you know, notwithstanding all your commentary about the economies of the world, everything's been really strong in travel.
Well, it feels like that's almost showed up in a way when it comes to the FX pressures. In the fourth quarter, it looks like your revenue took a 400 basis point hit due to just a really strong dollar. You're speaking about the geopolitical pressures. Is that something that you see continuing in the year ahead?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, it does impact, you know, comps and comparing historical results to current results. But I think in general, it hasn't been an issue. You know, pricing has been high. We've seen inflation and travel, considerable inflation over the last several years, but those prices seem to be holding quite well, whether it's airfares or hotel rates, et cetera. And the consumers seem to be more than willing to pay for it. So demand remains really strong. And I don't see much change coming from that. And I don't think, you know, you may have some vectors impacted where certain travelers might not want to come to the U.S. or whatever, but we are very strong in the U.S. and a strong dollar actually helps us on international travel.
Expedia CEO Peter Kern there earlier on Bloomberg. Look, he's sounding pretty positive, optimistic, but look, over the last couple of days, we've seen Expedia on the downside, off by more than 9%. In fact, today having its worst day since May of 2022. So clearly still some concerns about those fourth quarter misses amid the weather. Let's talk tech layoffs right now because they continue, and this time the fintech industry really being singled out at the moment, where thousands are losing their jobs as companies cut costs for the first time. Just think about a firm, think about Upstart firing one in every five of their workers, and other firms have made deeper cuts. If you pivot into the world of Silicon, Micron also cutting costs, as this time in the C-suite, in fact. But there's one company bucking the trend, and this is it. Apple. Look at this chart. During the industry's pandemic-fueled hiring binge, Apple added fewer employees than other big tech firms. Now, on top of that, the company generated far more revenue per new hire. Check out that overall, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. So overall, look at revenue per additional headcount. 2.5 million for Apple. I mean, we know that they are just so profitable. Alphabet, 1.25 million per hire. But ultimately, it is a sign that Apple managed to weather this downturn a little bit better.
Yeah, and you know, Mike McKee, Bloomberg economics correspondent, always points out to me, look at the jobless claims number, and these tech layoffs don't show up, partly because they may not have happened yet, or they're finding new jobs pretty quick. But the theme being lean and mean, that's the takeaway.
Yeah, we continue to discuss this. I mean, lean and mean, that does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. Ed?
Don't forget our podcast, wherever you get it, recap this week on Spotify, iHeart, and Apple. This is Bloomberg.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.